Moto Casino, American Social Casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, American Social Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at COTA.com/service changes. That's COTA.com/service changes. COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at COTA.com/service changes. That's COTA.com/service changes.
Welcome to La Liga Weekly. So who says La Liga is boring? It's better than Line of Duty and about as far-fetched. So here's the plot. The president of a world-famous football club pays a shady organisation to muddy the reputation of their political rivals. Needs a twist. So he gets them to stitch up the club's own players. Now, you didn't see that coming, did you? But we need another twist. So, well, we can't do the whole Brazilian transfer saga again. So let's say they pay more than the going rate for besmirching their own players, because apparently there is a going rate for that. And the police arrest them and raid the football club. Right, this is good. This is good. I reckon by Series 6, Piqué will turn out to be a Real Madrid double agent. Could make it messy, but that doesn't make sense. Now, if you haven't been following the news, apparently Josep Bartomeu and his mates have been arrested and Barcelona has been raided by the police. There are no charges, we should say, but plenty of weird stories. I mean, why? Why any of it? It's as baffling as Martin Brathwaite playing for Barcelona. But then I suppose if the police launched a criminal investigation every time a football club made a weird signing, we'd have to have a whole new Interpol. Anyway, I suspect that Barca fans are quite happy about the whole thing. They'd be delighted if Bartomeu went to prison, even if it's just for incompetence. And of course, on the pitch, they beat Sevilla. Real Madrid have dropped points at home to Real Sociedad Monday night. A good few days in all for the Barcelona fans. Elsewhere, Atleti are 5 points clear with the game in hand after their victory over Villarreal. Ground out despite the VAR doing his best to find a reason to disallow that opening goal and save the blushes of the linesman who flagged for an offside for some reason. Getafe hammered Valencia, reducing Gabriel Paulista to tears in his sweary post-match interview. You can tell he's settled in at Valencia. Next week, the players will bring their own white handkerchiefs. The relegation battle is interesting. We'll look at that as well. So, bottom place, Huesca, just 2 points behind 16th place, Caddy. Thank you to our patrons, patreon.com/LTale. Darren McNally sent us an interesting message. We'll have a good look at that. We'll have a deconstruct of that and another state of Spanish football again as we have a chat later in the week with the Patreons. Terry, right then, plenty of football to digest. I mean, have you got anything to add about Barca, about the weirdness? I mean, I think we're just reading press reports from Spain, aren't we? And it's just baffling, isn't it?
It is. And when you think that they have a relatively easy job to do, don't they? Whoever's president of Barcelona in normal circumstances, the next one hasn't got an easy job. But when they are one of the richest clubs in the world with one of the biggest revenues in the world, just to manage it properly, to somehow have accumulated so much debt and now all these allegations that have been lingering for a while, haven't they? Mm. I mean, there was an independent audit done on this particular case regarding this PR company that were, supposedly meant to be monitoring the PR for Barcelona Football Club. That's been lingering on for some while. The independent audit done for Barcelona didn't find any irregularities, but I think this has now gone on to the police. And the police appear to have suspicions that there are irregularities. So, I mean, the idea of it was to nullify any threat, wasn't it, from outsiders to become the new president. I know he couldn't become president again, but he would like to have been one of his associates that's probably been running the show, as it was probably in an attempt to hide the absolute cock-up that they've done over the last 5 or 6 years, going back to Sandro Rosselli as well. So it's an incredible situation.
It's always bizarre when an organisation pays for PR to defend the organisation. I always think that with government PR. I always think, well, hang on, we're paying for this. Yeah. You know, we're paying for this PR that you're then using to try and persuade us of a situation. Which I think, so the Barca, you know, effectively, because, you know, Barca fans, ultimately, you know, that's football fans are ultimately paying for football clubs, aren't they? It doesn't come from magic, does it? You know, the companies that are putting money in are putting in money in because we all watch it and because the fans turn up and watch it. So you are using the fans' own money to manipulate a situation by employing a PR firm. So whether, you know, whether the police find illegality in the end, we don't know that, but whatever. It's a weird situation. Even if they've only done the non-illegal bit of it, it's still weird.
Yeah. Oh, definitely the non-illegal bit being, I guess, slagging off the players and people to do with a club. That's not illegal, but obviously the payments and stuff like that, and they've overpaid for it as well. As you said, I don't know how much the going rate is to slag off anyone that is anything to do with your club. It's ridiculous.
Shall we do Barca? While we're on Barca, let's do the good news then for Barcelona. In fact, you know what? I don't know whether Barca, you tell us, Barca fans, you tell us. We had interesting feedback last week from Barca fans who were basically saying, unanimous from the Barca fans who get in touch with us, they don't want any kind of change of structure of the club. They don't want massive amounts of foreign investment and all of that. They want the traditional Barcelona model, just want it done better. Fair enough. So on the pitch, they beat Sevilla by 2-0, they're second in La Liga. Mm-hmm. It's a weird old season, isn't it? You know, their form in La Liga. Yeah. You take out the late goal they conceded against Cadiz. It's excellent, despite
immaculate.
Despite the, you know, the humiliation in the Champions League.
Yes, it is, and you know, it was all doom and gloom, wasn't it? 10 days ago, and from then on, they've reacted well, and that was a really impressive win at the weekend. That's the first big win they've had this season against one of the best teams in La Liga, and we can count Sevilla as one of those. And their overall performance was superb. They conceded very few chances. They worked hard in midfield. They looked solid defensively. They worked hard in midfield. They were creative in midfield. And they had a threat with the new strike force in this game, with Dembele playing more central alongside Messi. Yeah. And the three in midfield were excellent. The wing-backs played well. I thought Jordi Alba could push forward a little bit more than Sergiño Dest did. The three at the back gave them more security. Busquets playing in front of the three central defenders, he looked more solid and more secure. But the fact it wasn't him and one other behind him, or at best two central defenders, you know, on Saturday they had a good solid back three with Busquets in front, and it served them well. So I think they were really impressive in that game. And the new systems that Koeman comes up with now and then, which he's done on a few occasions this season, has shown the intelligence of the players. They've reacted well. They've embraced it, and it's particularly the three at the back. When he's used that, I kind of think that, you know, maybe it is time to use that more often than what we're seeing at the moment.
Right, because you've revealed your trick to me, Terry, haven't you? Where you find these? I'm going to share screen for. So this is Patreons only, I'm afraid. So we'll explain this as we go along. So, so here we are. Right, so. Average positions of the Barcelona players. And then we take that off there and a bit that off there. So this explains, the Patreons can see it, and Terry, you'll have to explain to them. So this is Barcelona, isn't it? And they're quite high up the pitch. And when we did this earlier in the season, they were, it was really, it was a mess, wasn't it? The formation yes. that they were playing. Whereas this, you know, it's got a, well, you can explain it to us. You're the expert. It's got a nice symmetry about it.
Yeah, it's got a back three. So it's Longley on the left of the three, Piqué in the middle, Mingueza to the right. And then you had, it kind of, Busquets just sitting in front. So he's the deepest of the midfield players, and that's clear to see on the screen where it's showing the average position. And then you have Pedri and Frenkie de Jong playing ahead of him. And, of course, the wing-backs are Serginho Dest down the right, Jordi Alba on the left. And on this screen share, you can see actually a difference in position between the two wing-backs, where Serginho Dest is almost alongside Messi and Dembele, who are the front two. And Jordi Alba's position is more restricted in just still in his own half of the pitch. So I think that's where the improvement, which is unusual, it's strange, because normally we would see Jordi Alba playing in a back four and his position is much higher than that. So to see him in his average position be quite defensive, perhaps it was the tussle that he was having on the right flank with Jesus Navas in particular. Perhaps it meant that he had to be more defensive. You're right, it has got a symmetry. You can see the back three, you can see the midfield three, how they're meant to function, and that's exactly how they did. And it was always interesting, wasn't it, of course, to see Dembele playing off the wing, playing in a more central role. And you know what? It's something that a manager must look at. It's not something I'd thought of, because if you look at the options available to Koeman to play up front, Messi is there, of course, and then you have Griezmann and you have Braithwaite. But I think when you look at the Dembele situation with regards to his attributes, he's two-footed. I mean, that was one of the reasons he was able to score such a fine goal. He's got the pace. You know, he's got obvious attributes that perhaps the others haven't got, you know, and that would be first and foremost his pace. Yeah. So if he can learn to make those runs in behind, that's something that will scare the life out of defenders. You know, they'd like to defend high up against Barcelona. You'd fancy in the past your chances of defending high up against Messi and Suarez. You know, Suarez has moved on. And now Messi, so you're thinking, yes, he can run in behind, but it's not often we see Messi running behind to get onto a ball over the top. You know, he runs fast, dribbles fast with the ball. So with Dembele, Griezmann isn't lightning quick, you know, so that's a Norwich Braithwaite. So with Dembele being as quick as he is, it does sow a seed of doubt in a defender's mind how high they can push up and squeeze up the pitch. And of course, when he gets an opportunity to finish, he can do it with either foot. So it kind of makes sense. And I must admit, it isn't something I'd thought of previously. But having seen him do it at the weekend against one of the best teams, against one of the best central defensive pairings as well, and to be the threat that he was, then I would imagine it's, you know, something that Koeman will look to pursue in still a relatively young player, whose best position perhaps might be not as a winger, more of a central attacking player. That was interesting to see.
It was an element of luck about the finish, wasn't there? But there, I know there often is. But he sort of scuffed it and it went between the goalkeeper's legs.
Yeah.
His finishing is questionable, isn't it? I think, is that not too harsh?
Oh, clearly something. Finishing and his final delivery into the box at times. I just hope, and I'm not sure whether they do, I hope that someone would compile in each game that he plays, little highlights and lowlights clip to show all the good things that he does, because that's what Barcelona want to see from him. But also show him the silly little mistakes that if he can eradicate, then it takes him onto a new level. Mm. Because, you know, it's frustrating to see a player of his talent, equally good with left and right foot, give away a five-yard pass or deliver a bad cross into the penalty area in terms of being inaccurate or picking the wrong player, making the wrong decisions. If they could show him them on a game-by-game basis, he would probably be surprised and think, but why did I fail to make that pass accurate?
Yeah.
You know, it's a 10-yard pass sometimes and it goes astray. So those things he has to take more care of. But there is certainly a talent there. We haven't seen it fulfill its potential yet, but he is certainly better this season than he has been in previous seasons. And Koeman has to take the credit for that. And giving him the responsibility of playing up front, he looked as if he enjoyed it. And it might be, you know, something that he embraces, because he won't be tied to playing in that wide position. when you're playing as one of the front two, you can go left, you can go right, you can go wide, you can drop deep, you can run in behind. It opens up a whole set of options for you that you don't have when you're playing, when you're restricted to playing on the wing. I, because of my size, people tried to make me into a winger. I hated playing up and down in a straight line. So I preferred to play as a centre forward so I could go down the left, go down the right, running behind. Didn't particularly look to come short because there wasn't a lot in that for me because there was the tackle from behind. So it was, you're doing quite well if you found the space where you popped off and dropped in as a number 10 in my sort of generation of football. But I liked the freedom of movement that you had by playing in a centre, we call it a centre forward role, but you are allowed to roam, make the runs down the channels, stuff like that. And it might be something that appeals to him that he hadn't thought of before. And full credit to Koeman for coming up with a change.
Where should we go next? Shall we go to, let's do tonight's game because we're recording this Monday night. So you'll hear this Tuesday, I think the regular podcasters. And Real Madrid, it was an entertaining game. I enjoyed it, but
really good.
Yeah, Real Sociedad at their best, somewhere near their best, I think. And then obviously, so they led Porto's header, and then Vinicius came off the bench and got a late equaliser for Real Madrid to rescue them, and in a way rescue Zidane, because as you were saying to me earlier, that you couldn't quite figure out what his plan was.
No, it baffled me, to be honest. I thought the first half, Real Sociedad started off well, but I thought Real Madrid took control of the game then and looked the better team. And it didn't seem a reason big enough for me for him to make such a drastic change during the break. The change was to go from the 4-3-3 to the three at the back. Excuse me, and Casemiro dropped in between Nacho and Varane, which left a great big load of space in midfield for two aging midfield players who've been playing every single minute of Real Madrid's games in the recent weeks. And the three-man midfield of Real Sociedad, which included David Silva, enjoyed that extra space. And for 15, 20 minutes, the changes made by Zidane played into the hands of Real Sociedad. They looked a much better team. They should have gone two ahead. Isak had a second opportunity where he failed to get on the end of a cross. And if for 10, 15 minutes, it looked like Real Sociedad were pretty much going to threaten to score on every attack. So that led to another change by Zidane to revert back to the four at the back, put Casemiro back in midfield, and he took the front three off, which I thought was a little bit of a shame, to be honest, because up until half-time, as I say, I thought Real Madrid looked the better team. And it's always going to be a tight game. Real Sociedad can be good opponents. And it was probably a little bit harsh on the front three to whip them off after 60 minutes. When you look at the individuals involved, Isco, Mariano Diaz and Marco Asensio, take those three off, put the three new players on, the Rodrigo, Vinicius and Hugo Duro. But the system suited Real Madrid better. And they eventually got a deserved equaliser at the very least. And also that came on the back of Real Sociedad going to five at the back as the game went on to the later stages. So I kind of get that, though. You're winning 1-0 away from home against Real Madrid. That I thought the biggest fault for me from Aguasil was not taking Oyarzabal off.
Right.
He took one or two others off. Oyarzabal wasn't prepared to get back and defend on his side in a wide position. He was quite happy to sort of jog back and get in amongst the pack, but he left the space out wide. And Real Madrid it was an invitation for Real Madrid just to keep crossing the ball into the penalty area. And, even if they had five at the back, I thought that was what should have happened. They should have gone Oyarzabal and Baranachea when he came on, although Baranachea ended up playing as a wing back. But Oyarzabal could have helped his team out a lot more by getting back into a defensive position and stopping Lucas Vazquez just creeping up on the right and just crossing it, shedding it into the box, where Casemiro probably should have had at least three goals from crosses. So they invited the crosses into the penalty area. Although they had three central defenders on, let's not forget, Zubeldia is a midfield player. I think if it's a weak area of the pitch for Real Sociedad, it's centre of defence still. And Zubeldia is a midfield player, so they're not blessed with great height at the back. So I understood why he put Sanyen on, who's taller, and would give them, but stop the crosses first and foremost. And they didn't do that. and eventually one of those crosses come in from that side on the flank, and Vinicius got a late equaliser. And at that stage, you thought, this is classic Real Madrid. They're going to turn it round. They're going to get the next one as well. And I thought Real Madrid were going to snatch a dramatic win, but I think Real Madrid at least deserved the draw. But it's
but Sergio Ramos wasn't playing, so he wasn't there.
Yeah, and that it just baffled me that Zidane chose when it didn't look. The situation wasn't drastic to make a change. Maybe, you know, give it another 10, 15 minutes and then make one or two substitutions, maybe tinker with the formation a little bit to see how the game is going on. But at halftime, I didn't think that change was needed. And just with two in midfield, it left too much work for Modric and Toni Kroos to do. So the good news for Real Madrid, though, is that players are coming back from injury. Marcelo was on the bench tonight. They didn't use them. Odriozola was on the bench, didn't use him. Rodrigo was back, so that has helped. And Fede Valverde came on as well. So that helps alleviate the pressure on Modric and Kroos in the next coming weeks. But any game of football where you've got midfielders of Modric, Kroos and David Silva, it's going to be a decent match. And it was. I thought all three played their part. But Silva certainly enjoyed that 15 minutes. I'm surprised he got brought off as well. Because in the last 10 minutes, I don't think he was in love with the idea of them going five at the back and retreating. But his experience, you know, might have helped them in that 10, 15 minutes that was left to play. So I was surprised at that as well. It didn't appear to me that he was tiring and needed a rest. So, you know, that's what managers do. They make decisions. Some work, some don't. The better ones, you know, majority of the time, those decisions do work. But I thought both managers sort of cocked it up a bit, to use a better phrase, in this particular game.
That'll do. Technical phrase. Some of you might not understand that technical phrase. Right, quick one. Did you see Gareth Bale playing at the weekend?
Yep.
He's a world-class player.
Of course.
Yes. Yeah. And here's another technical phrase. When he can be asked, he's a world-class player, isn't he, Gareth Bale?
Yeah, there's got to be the right conditions. He's got to be playing. He's got to be match fit. We know that the concerns with his general fitness, and he's not entirely confident about his body. He hasn't been for a couple of years now, but he can still play. And it's quite frustrating when you see Real Madrid. As a Spurs fan, I'm glad to see him back. And it's been bugging the life out of me that he hasn't been playing and been getting criticised. He gets criticised for his attitude on the bench when he's subbed. You know, he did it at Real Madrid and he does it at Spurs. I don't know how he puts up with that nonsense, but he's been playing well. He's scoring goals. You can see his technique. Some of the goals, you know, a couple of the goals he's got recently. Classic Gareth Bale. He hugged his legs at the weekend and knocked it past the defender and left him for dead. Classic Gareth Bale. And it's again, baffling as to why he was chucked out, to be perfectly honest, the playing squad for such a long period of time at Real Madrid. And also Martin Odegaard played well for Arsenal the weekend.
Yeah.
And people are now saying, oh,
he's good, isn't he?
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, those two alone, Jovic hasn't set the world alight in Germany, but he's not playing on a regular basis, which will be a disappointment for him and Real Madrid at Frankfurt. But those two, that considering the problems Real Madrid have had recently, Gareth Bale, if you can treat him properly, get him fit and maintain him, you know, to playing at a decent level, is still good enough for Real Madrid, let alone Spurs.
Let's go to the top of the league then, shall we? It was hard work for Atletico. But, you know, they haven't had a good record at Villarreal. They're away to Villarreal, who were desperate for a win. And, you know, it's a bit of a cliche, isn't it? It's the kind of result that wins you the league in the end, to go and not play brilliantly, to suffer, as they like to say in Spain, and come away with the victory. But, you know, they got there. And, yeah, in Atletico's style, it was deserved.
It was. It was an interesting game. I mean, Villarreal got one or two injury issues as well. So, but you're right. Atletico do struggle against Villarreal, and Atletico are not playing at the top of their game at the moment. The confidence isn't what it was a month ago. And this result will go a long way to restoring those confidence levels going into a big game at the weekend, of course, in the Madrid derby. So it was complicated in terms of, I like to watch the game and go, oh, within 5 minutes, I'm looking at the game thinking, I said, four at the back, there's a three at the back, there's a five at the back, there's two up front, and try and get an idea. I don't do it after 10 seconds. I'm not one of those that goes from kickoff, but 15 minutes in, I was baffled with what Atletico were playing. At times, it looked like a three, a four, or a five. Sal looked like a wing back. He looked like a midfield player. Correa was playing almost right back ahead of Rosalico, who was could have been a right wing back if it's a five. But it almost looked to me like Simeone set out and said, right, in my opinion, it was a back four to start with, five across midfield and Suarez up front. And it appeared to me as if Simeone thought, well, I'm not entirely sure what Villarreal are going to do, how they're going to play because of their injuries. Now, Alcacer in particular, and he wanted to see where Samuel Chukwueze played, where Moy Gomez played, where Trigueros was playing in the grand scheme of things, who was going to be supporting Gerard, where is Gerard Moreno going to start? So it looked like he went with a 4-5-1 and then reacted to what Villarreal were doing. And we quite clearly saw after 15 minutes, it was seen on television doing it. We saw Sal start, as I said, wide left midfield in this 4-5-1. We saw Marcus Llorente play deep in that midfield. He wasn't pushing forward. And then after 15 minutes, there was a swap. You saw Simeone initiate it. Sal swapped with Thomas Lemar, who went and played. So Thomas Lemar went from central to wide. Sal went into midfield. And then Llorente went closer, a lot closer to Luis Suarez. So you had then Koke, Sal in the midfield. You had Marcus Llorente trying to get forward to Suarez. I mean, this average position we're seeing now is the 90-minute position.
Yeah, which doesn't quite tell the story this time, does it? Because of the switches he made. So you end up with Sal, who is there, left side of midfield, but you're right, entirely because he started off right up here, didn't he? Far left. Yeah. And then
in the second half, he played left wing back.
Yeah.
When they went to a five. Mm. So it was chopping and changing all the way through. And I don't think it's a great idea to do in general. I was critical of Oscar Garcia at Celta Vigo, during this season and last season, where sometimes he would do similar to this every game. We would see this with Celta Vigo, where it was a three at the back, a four, it was like three in midfield, or it was four in midfield, two up front, three up front, constantly changing the systems. And I thought that, maybe the Lemar coming off at halftime, we saw him with ice on his legs, and maybe there was an injury. So maybe he was forced into that change in the second half. Or was it the fact that after making a change, they got a goal from Savic or Pedraza, own goal, whichever.
Oh, it was an own goal. Yeah, it was an own goal.
Yep. Yeah. And now then he thought, we can, at halftime, we'll go back to the five at the back and protect the one goal lead.
I'm going
to
add in,
bring on João Félix. So yeah, no, you can add in.
So right, there's João Félix coming on, and here number four. See where he goes.
Come on for Suarez.
So Jeffrey Kondogbia. So Suarez was up front, and his average position. So podcast listeners, he's a centre back.
Suarez came off, didn't he? Suarez came off for Kondogbia.
Yeah, and he's a centre back. Kondogbia there. He didn't move. Where he's playing, isn't he? Yeah.
Yep. He didn't move. Mm. So the 90-minute average is. Kind of, it doesn't fit in this particular game because if you look at Sal, for instance, that's his 90-minute average, but he started wide left, he went to central midfield, and then he went to left wing back.
Yeah.
Now, it's great to have these versatile players like Marco Llorente, midfield, he played as a striker, he can play right wing back, he can play right side of midfield, but sometimes you use those to have too much of an effect on your team. So Sal is the same. Hermoso could be likewise as well. He can play left back, left-sided centre-half in a two, left-sided centre-back in a three. And sometimes it just complicates it. But you're right, this was a really important result in terms of the points for the league table and for morale for Atletico. And the clean sheet. Oblak played better than he has done recently as well. I mean, he wasn't overworked, a couple of good saves. Villarreal had lots more shots, more possession. But Atletico, with the second goal in particular, the first goal was a set piece, second goal, a mistake from Pau Torres, and João Félix finished it off nicely. Has talked himself out of trouble, I think, hasn't he? By blaming his teammate, Renan Lodi, because it looked to me that João Félix looks to be a bit in a mood lately, I think.
Yeah, although Simeone, I It's an interesting one.
It won't bother Simeone.
Yeah. Sorry, say again?
It won't bother him. It won't bother Simeone.
Well, in fact, he likes it. Because what happened, I forgot to incorporate this into the introduction. He basically has a sort of hissy, shut up, sweary fit.
And goes like that to the bench.
Yeah, yeah. And you sort of think, well, who are you doing that to? And then all the media.
Brendan Loddy, he said it was. It was a sub who said that he hasn't been playing well lately.
Yeah. Yes.
I think he had the ump with Simeone for not starting him.
Yeah.
And for where he was playing as well.
Yeah.
Wide on the left. Yeah. And he wants to be involved as the number 10 playing official, Luis Suarez, playing, you know, where he can influence the game more. So I think ongoing, that's a problem. It was interesting that, did you read the interview done with Felipe, the former Atletico?
No, Madrid, I didn't. No, yeah, Chelsea go on. Player. Yeah, yeah.
And he said that playing for Simeone is like playing for no other manager. He said he has no heart, no soul when it comes to picking the team and leaving players out. Nothing fazes him. It doesn't matter who you are, how big a name you are. It has no impact. It doesn't care. He does what's right for the team and what's right for the performance levels of the team. So
which is entirely right.
Totally.
But it's a question of how you deal with it sometimes, isn't it? Because remember, he had that sort of almost ongoing war with Mandzukic, didn't he? I thought he was trying to kill him before the end of the season.
And some players find that hard. Yeah. You know, I'm not sure I would have enjoyed it. But there's some that have been casualties along the way, haven't there, where he must just look at them and think, no, you're not doing it, you're dropped, don't care who you are, don't care how much you cost. This is my team for this weekend and you're not playing. So João Félix is still going through that process. I hope it works out. I genuinely do, because I think he could be a superstar at Atletico Madrid. Mm-hmm. But the relationship is tough going at the moment between him and Simeone, but his goal was quality. Different class, chest control, lovely finish, accurate finish, powerful finish. And that completed the victory for Atletico. And on the back of the Real Madrid result, they looking a bit nervy a week, you know, before the weekend's games. Suddenly with Real Madrid dropping a couple of points, Barcelona, Real Madrid neck and neck, 5-point gap to Atletico, who still have a game in hand. So, you know, just imagine if they had beaten Levante in both of those matches, it would be done and dusted by now.
Yes. However, it's not a huge game coming up this weekend, isn't it?
Yes.
The Madrid derby.
How do you think Simeone will play that?
I think a 5 up front, I think.
The manager with no heart, no soul in terms of team selection. I expect to see 4 central defenders. And 2 fullbacks. Trippier is back as well, isn't it?
But given that in previous big games that they've messed up, you've said they've been too cautious. So you think you'll be cautious, but would you urge him not to be? Or is there no point in urging Simeone not to be cautious because he just will be? Yeah.
Yeah, and he knows better than me. You know, for God's sake, he is a supreme manager, knows his players well. The one thing you might look at the Real Madrid team selection, I mentioned about 1 or 2 players coming back tonight, but there's still no Ramos, no Benzema. Don't know if they're going to be back. Even if they are, I wouldn't imagine. Maybe Benzema, if he's fit, might be given the nod because he hasn't been out as long as some of the others, but no Hazard. Hazard won't be starting against Atletico. Ramos won't be starting against Atletico. Valverde might come into the team, but that'd be at the expense of Kroos or Modric, you would imagine. So there might be a reason for Simeone to think, you know, let's not be too cautious. Don't be gung-ho by any means of the imagination, but it'd be interesting because a win for Atletico kills Real Madrid in terms of the title race.
Yeah.
So, but a draw, Simeone would be delighted to be 5 points clear of Real Madrid come the week after the game at the weekend and still have a game in hand. I have no doubt about that.
Let's just have a quick look.
At the same time, though, Barcelona win.
Yeah.
And Atletico drop a couple of points. Barcelona win. It gives them encouragement. Barcelona will be closer to Atletico. So it's not just about the two facing each other at the weekend.
Yeah. So Barcelona fans supporting Real Madrid this weekend. Yeah. Interesting situation. Let's just, before we take a break for podcast listeners, let us just do Betis, shall we? Because we've done the rest of the what was the top six, but obviously Betis have crashed into the top six. It took a late header by Juanmi for them to beat Cadiz. But I expressed my doubts about Pellegrini's staying power and energy levels. But, you know, they're coming on strong. It's, you know, three straight wins and you know, they're looking like a solid team.
Yeah, and it took a while for the penny to drop, didn't it? We joked in earlier podcasts during the season, they got beat heavily by someone, and he said, oh, that came out of nowhere. I didn't expect that from this team. And we were thinking, yeah, that's what happened every 3 or 4 weeks last year. It was like he'd never seen Betis play in the last couple of years. And, you know, finally, I think he realised that, you know, they can't just be all-out attack in that position. There has to be some basic fundamentals put in place, which I think in general over the years, wherever he's been manager, he's been known for doing. I've always admired the way he sets up his defence, you know, in terms of a holding the line, a decent offside trap, not a silly one, you know, holding the edge of the box and stuff like that. All the clubs he's managed, he's done that before. And now he's getting that across to the Betis players. So I think a lot of credit has to go to the fact that at one stage they were statistically the worst defence in the league. That wasn't long ago. And now they've stopped conceding goals. They're not prolific in front of goal by any means. They still struggle to find an out-and-out goal scorer, but you know, between them, they're finding a way to get enough goals to win these close matches. And you know, to see where they are now in the league above Villarreal, sitting pretty in sixth position. It's been fine period of work done by Pellegrini and his team. And I'm pleased. We need those big clubs to be in the mix, don't we, for the European spots.
Yes, right.
Let's take they would serve La Liga well in European football, Real Betis. Yeah.
Right, let's take a quick break for podcast listeners and we'll be back with the rest of La Liga in a moment.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes. Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Getafe 3, Valencia 0. Getafe hadn't had a shot on goal for 3 years. And then Mauro Arambarri put all of the shots that they should have taken all into one great big shot from 30 metres out. And he set them on their way. So a fabulous goal. Helped, of course, that they played against 10 men for most of the second half. And two teams under a lot of pressure, two teams who desperately needed a result. And one of them has come out under more pressure.
Yeah, I don't think the pressure is that much on Valencia. I think that the reaction is they're not as good as they have been in recent years. And there's an obvious, blindingly obvious reason for that. And I don't think they're going to get relegated. I think they're going to be okay. So I admired Gabriel Paulista for caring so much. And probably he's just sick of the fact that he went to what he thought was genuinely going to be big team competing for honours at the top of the table, trying to get in Champions League football, which is the norm for Valencia. And what he's found is a team that bears little resemblance to the ones that we've seen in the past. So I'm referring to his interview after the game where he was effing and blinding live on television and breaking down in tears. But I thought this in this particular game, it was revert back to type for Bordalas. Two big strikers. That was key for me. You know, playing Enes Unal and Jaime Mata together up front. We've seen him recently playing Cucho Hernandez and Engel or one of those and someone playing in a more deeper role like Carlos Alenia, for instance. Taki Kubo, but now he did at the weekend was the 11 that played. Enizuno's a new signing this summer, but the rest of the team's been there and they know what's required for playing for Bordeaux and playing for Getafe. So you look at the lineup, Soria in goal. He's been in and out of the team this season for, I don't think, for any reason, particularly why. And then the back four, Suarez, Jenny, Cabaco, Oliveira, last season's back four. In midfield, Neon, Arambari, Maximovic, Cucurella, last season's midfield four. And the season before. And up front, two big strong strikers that work hard, chase the channels, which led to the second goal, I think, from Mata. Unal flicks a long ball on. Mata gets away, holds off a defender and fires home. So I think it was just back to basics for Getafe, whereas Bordeaux has been caught this year trying to change the style of Getafe in terms of how, you know, probably he was perceived. That's been my criticism. You know, perhaps he wanted to change his reputation, and it's been at the expense of the impact that Getafe have in general. So you can see there, 17 Oliveira, 22 Damien Suarez, the two centre backs, Cabaco and Jenny, Maximovic and Arambari midfield are a super pairing. But what he's tried to do is get Carlos Alenia in there this season. Portillo has played wide instead of Neon. To try and make them a little bit more pleasing on the eye. Cucurella is a mainstay and has been, you know, even with, you know, Bordeaux trying to change the system. But in this particular game, it was back to basics, 4-4-2 with the two big lads up front. And it worked. I mean, they were emphatic winners in the end. As you say, Diakabi getting sent off in the 50th minutes, as you rightly said, most of the second half. That doesn't help Valencia. That was only 1-0 at that stage. So it's tough on Valencia, tough on Javi Gracia. I'm not sure what more he could do. I mean, I can't accuse him of tinkering with the system, tinkering with the players, because he hasn't got the choices. You know, it's a small squad. And, you know, I think on paper, the strongest 11 is still pretty decent, but no more than mid-table. And that's, I think, is where they're going to finish this season. So I expect some more disappointments for Valencia as the season progresses. I don't expect it to end up in disaster with them getting relegated. And, you know, it's a shame because we need a vibrant Valencia in La Liga. So I'm hoping things can get back to, I don't know how they're going to get back to normal. But that's what I'm hoping with Valencia.
If you are wondering where we get those formations from, by the way, because they're really interesting, because not just the formation, the paper formation that you think they're going to be beforehand, so it's actually how they played. They're on ask.com, and then you look in, there's basically each match page has a stats section, and then you have to drill down. So you've quite a lot of levels of drilling down, but they are really interesting. And our Patreons who are watching the video of this will also know that I've just bought some running shoes as well, because
I didn't notice that.
displaying what your recent purchasing history is for the world to share. But other news.
Could be worse, John.
So let's have a look at the bottom, shall we? In fact, I'll again, just for our patrons, I will share the table, because it's fascinating, isn't it? Because the bottom half, or the bottom few positions are just absolutely fascinating. So Huesca at bottom with 20 points, Elche a point above them and a place above them, 21, and then three teams on 22, Alaves, Valladolid and Eibar. So Eibar, 16th, just 2 points above Huesca, who are bottom. And then Cadiz not out of it. And then, so they shouldn't go down. Valencia, Getafe, and then Osasuna of 28 points. But the truth is, all of those teams are still fighting for survival.
Yeah, I would personally go Cadiz down still. I just think that Valencia will get another two or three, four wins.
Yeah. They should be fine, shouldn't they? Yeah.
Yeah. Getafe will be fine. Osasuna, the points are in the bag, and I expect them to get enough points to survive. So I think genuinely now it's Cadiz. I know they're three clear, but they've been stuck on that 23, 24, 25 points for a few months now. And, you know, since we saw them in the top four at one stage, I think. They were in the top six, definitely, with a ridiculously good start to the season. But I always thought they would struggle. I just didn't think they had it. I didn't think they had the talent to stay in that position in the league, and I did expect a slump, and it has come. Whether they can change that and their fortunes, I'm not so sure now. But there are some teams down there. Huesca, remarkable, you know, with three wins all season, that they've still got a solid chance of surviving. Elche, we can see, have got a game in hand. They will be disappointed with their result at the weekend against Granada. I was so impressed by Granada. And I have been in recent weeks, but I was so impressed at the weekend with so many players out injured. And the interview with Diego Martinez after the game, the manager of Granada, said that's one of his proudest results as manager of Granada. And he said, I include us getting promotion, qualifying for Europe, where they had big wins last season in La Liga, big wins in the Europa League this season to get them to the stage they are now. And he said that was one of his proudest moments because of the setbacks that they've had recently in terms of injuries and stuff like that, the amount of games they've had to play this season. And you saw the passion and enthusiasm and the emotion when Antonio Puertas gets the winning goal to make it 2-1. It could be easy for them to knock off. You know, you look see where they are in the league. Mm. They're going to be safe. They're in the last eight of the... It is the last eight, isn't it, the Europa League now? I think it is, yeah. Last eight.
Yeah.
Are they doing well in the Europa League? And, you know, for them to suddenly think, well, before the game at the weekend, we've got 30 points, we've got loads of players missing through injury. We've got another Europa League game coming up. We can take our foot off the gas in this one. But they didn't. They were superb. So it just shows the all-round job he's done at Granada. Excellent stuff. So I think Elche would be disappointed, you know, that they didn't make the most of, like Huesca did the week before when Granada rested a few and Huesca got the win. This week, that wasn't the case for Granada. Valladolid will be kicking themselves. I mean, that is, don't give away a silly free kick and allow a ball to be delivered into the penalty box. Jason Murillo, the centre-back of Celta Vigo, is clearly the player to mark in a small team. You know, you look at the strikers at Celta Vigo, got the midfield players, they're quite diminutive. And you allow him to be unmarked and fire home. And Sergio had, again, brought on an extra defender to deal with that aerial, possible aerial
94th minute.
94th minute. 2 points there for Valladolid. Look the difference that would have made to them in their attempts to get away from relegation. So that's 2 points dropped. Alaves are a concern, I think. Not seeing any improvement in Alaves. And a defeat against Osasuna at home was uninspiring again.
I saw the stat that he was the only club to replace their manager who haven't improved since Alaves, which is fair enough, isn't it? You know, they haven't got any better, have they?
No, he did that with Espanyol last season as well.
Yeah.
Didn't have I do expect better from Alaves. I'm not saying suggesting for 1 minute they're mid-table and above. They are a team that's going to be battling relegation, but we haven't seen any improvement whatsoever. And they've got a couple of good strikers. They normally, under Abelardo, when he was previously manager, they were hard to score against, which they're not at the moment. And Osasuna are just ticking over nicely. Kike Baja there with the scrappy goal, the worst goal of the weekend. And probably, you know, one of the most important for the teams that are... I mean, you take off those points from Osasuna, 25, if they had won that game, they'd still be in the mire. But that win, we talked about, didn't we, the games at the weekend, there was going to be a lot of movement between teams playing against each other in similar positions in the league. And Barcelona jumped up two spots, and Getafe went up two, Valencia down two, and Valladolid up a couple on a point, jumped a couple of places up the league table by getting a draw. So it was an interesting weekend of football. But Huesca and Eibar. Huesca again, Sandro gets an 81st minute goal and they can't hold on to the lead, concede from a corner, 2 points dropped from Huesca again away to Eibar, and Pape Diop is allowed to equalise.
Just one more game then, Levante 1, Athletic 1, two teams neck and neck. Levante 2 points above Athletic, but they played a game more, who obviously, you know, more important games coming up, I guess, isn't it? Because we've got the Copa del Rey games coming up in the week.
Yeah, and I think that this was, it wasn't a great game, I have to be honest. Both goals were penalties. Athletic just shaded it in terms of chances created. I think it's a big call, but I think the Copa del Rey probably does mean a little bit more to Levante. So perhaps that's the reason why they weren't at their best in this particular match. And I say that with all due respect to a proud club in Athletic Bilbao, but they've already got one final to look forward to. And I think they're looking to progress up the league a little bit higher than where they are at the moment. So I think Levante probably just eased off a bit. Athletic weren't able to take advantage of it. And it's all to play. They return and play against each other on Thursday, I think, is the Copa del Rey, the fixtures this week. What have we got? Wednesday, Barcelona, Sevilla. Thursday, Levante, Athletic.
Right, so plenty of fun, plenty of football to watch. And enjoy your Spanish football this week. Thank you to the Patreons. If you want to join in, it's patreon.com/LTEL and join in the fun. And we will see you for another podcast next week.
Casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right Rug.